The following is a presentation of Project Independence and WCWP. Project Independence is the Aging in Place Initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. We provide programs and services designed to assist and support the older town residents who wish to remain in their homes as they age. If we don't currently provide a service, we will try and connect you to that service. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome to Project Independence and you.
Okay, welcome back to Project Independence here at WCWP.org, 88.1 FM on your radio dial, if you still have a dial. And if you know what to do with that dial, you turn it till you get to 88.1 FM.
Some or, won't know what a dial is.
I know. We talk about that a lot on 88. But I guess it still works because it's still on your all your little, you know, promotional things.
Yeah,
and
it's so good.
But I like the app. I think you guys, the WCWP radio app is great. You just have to download it and you get right there. So we are on our final guest of the day, and it really is wonderful. And it's an honor to have you here because I, you know, been reading up a lot about the book and the work that you put into it and, you know, the honesty of it from all places, how you were raised, how the family was raised, and the beliefs and the, and I mean, just everything that surrounded that, the time of the Holocaust. So we're speaking with Donna Deasy Stone. And you are the author of No Past Tense, and it's a love and it's about love and survival in the shadow of the Holocaust.
Yes, it's the biography of Kadi and Willie Salzer, two Czech Jews who, as teenagers, were swept up by the Holocaust in Hungary, and it covers their entire lives, which makes it kind of unique among Holocaust memoir. Because what I found most interesting in meeting with them was not only their being taken and the concentration camps. She was in Auschwitz and he was in Mauthausen. They had no control over that. It was after liberation by the American troops where they had choice in life and they knew the absolute worst that people could do to people, and how do you live after that?
Right.
And so that's why it goes right up to their deaths. And
right.
Yeah, and I'm 65. I thought for the show, it's my first book. So seniors out there, take heed.
Made a note of that. It's never too late.
It's never too late.
They were teenagers during the time they
when they were taken. She was 15 and he was 19, and they were in Hungary.
Are they still with us today?
No, they passed away. And what happened when I first did a draft of the book, it was considered too experimental in style and what I covered. It wasn't like a traditional Holocaust memoir, and so it wasn't considered marketable. But I was hired by their son, who they never told him what happened to them during the war. And he decided, after they were interviewed by the Shoah Foundation, he decided to hire a writer to find out. And they actually tried writers from agencies in California, but they were like, what do these people know about us? And I knew the daughter of their best friend.
Oh.
And so it was that sort of a connection.
Right.
And that brought me into it. And for me, because I had been a journalist, but I was writing for a bank at the time, but I had this master's degree in cultural anthropology that I never used. And it was sort of like, wow, I know how to do ethnographies. I can actually use this. And they were such impressive people that I decided, okay, if you're willing to take a chance on me,
right,
let's try this and see what happens. But when I finished the draft, it was just considered too experimental because I did things like I took their interviews and I wove them into the narrative, and I only covered little instances of things where they remembered, and if they remembered things differently, I included both, which wasn't done 15 years ago, which now seems kind of normal to do that.
Right, yes.
Right. So I did that, and when it was published, finally, people are like, "Wow, this, you know, this is great. It's like normal."
How long ago did this process, when you were doing the interview, mm-hmm. when did that go on?
1999, and I had the extraordinary opportunity to be able to interview them over a year.
Right.
Which is remarkable, wow. mm-hmm. you know. So, and then I would research. Willie, especially Mr. Salzer, would help with the research, and it became this huge research project. I didn't know anything about Czechoslovakia and Hungary during the war, at all.
Right.
You know, I knew a little bit more about Poland.
Right. Your background right. includes Polish Catholic background.
Right.
Which. I read, you know, that that was a little bit, you were concerned that that background was a little different. Than
when I met them the first time, I said, well, you know, my father's Polish Catholic. I grew up around Polish Catholics, you know, mm. you remember like an immigrant type of, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I said, I could imagine my relatives back in Krakow throwing rocks at Jews because I knew about anti-Semitism. And he looked at me and said, well, you know about anti-Semitism then, don't you? And that was it. That was the moment.
Right.
was like, yeah, I'd love to write your book.
So did they know each other before the concentration camps, or did they meet after?
They met. They lived 10 miles apart.
Okay.
But they both ended up going to school in Budapest. And he was, of course, 4 years older.
Right.
And he was this drop-dead gorgeous soccer star and scholar athlete. You know that type of boy?
Yeah.
Right? And she, of course, was attractive too. But, you know, she saw him when they were put into the same ghetto in April of 1944. And she's the first time she looked at him, she said, I'm going to marry him, right?
Probably and, half the girls
right,
there.
Right. Right. And she said, I told those girls, that guy, he's mine. You stay away from him. So she fell. I think every 15-year-old, 16-year-old knows that feeling of you see a guy and it's like,
right.
Oh, it's him. Yeah.
Yes.
And after the war, when she heard he was alive, she went looking for him. And I'd like to say first, when she went home, she was the only Jew to return to her village. And that was very unusual for the Jews who survived the concentration camps to try and go home. A lot of them were killed or chased away. And she went home. She was the only Jew. And she went moved into the shed on her family's property because there were Christians living in the house, and she told everyone that she was there, everything was hers and not theirs, and she was living there to show them what they had done until she got the property back.
Wow.
Heard he was alive. He lives 10 miles away. He was in his family's home.
Now, she was still fairly young, though, when she...
She was 17 when she did this.
When she came home. So was her family all...
They were all gone.
All killed.
All killed. Everybody.
Both of them lose their families?
Yeah, except his sister, Lily, survived.
Right.
And he found her.
So you have the 17-year-old coming home. And
but keep in mind, there's no internet like we just talked about.
She mentioned that. She said,
10 miles apart is a long
way. You came
home,
and there was no word for it, the Holocaust.
Right.
And everything was in shambles. Mm-hmm. And there was no law and order. And there was no internet. And there was no one. You didn't know what happened. Like, she didn't know what happened to her father. And her grandfather. She knew what happened to her mother and her brother and her grandmother because they all went to Auschwitz. But you just didn't know, and there was no one to ask. So you just went home, and you waited, and you hoped other people would show up.
And they didn't.
And then nobody showed up. Yeah.
And the word didn't, it wasn't like everybody knew what was going on. It was like nobody knew.
No, and especially she was in the part of Czechoslovakia, which became Slovakia, which the Russians were in charge of. So there was less knowing what was going on than, say, where the Americans or the British were, and there were displaced persons camps, and the Red Cross was involved, and there was a little more communication. They were like in an abyss of information. Yeah.
What did writing this book do for you? How did it change you?
I didn't understand what it meant at all to be hated and terrorized the way they were, and how that hate or terror can happen from one group of people to any groups of people, not just Jews, and that impulse among human beings is just something you have to be on guard for all the time.
It's really hard to understand why it exists. You know, it really is. I mean, I don't get it.
It's just unfathomable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we could sit here all day. We're not going to come up with an answer. Some people just, if you are not like me, then you're no good. Or I can exert my power and my superiority by putting you down. I think that's the mentality. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you change
that. Ignorance. It's just total ignorance and not willing to, you know, I think, understand. I don't know. I don't want to even get into politics but this book is,
You know, the book, what I found was that you indicated somewhere in what I read that the book is used in school for Holocaust studies.
Yes, new opportunity that's happened. For me, the book, I'm going to William & Mary in April, where the upper-level Holocaust seminars.
Oh, really?
Class was reading the book, and I'll discuss it. And that, to me, is enormous.
Yeah.
And then in the fall, Loyola Marymount University is bringing it to their campus. So for students to be studying this book is, to me, just the pinnacle of...
It's written in a way, I think, and that it's kind of relatable to people, too. It's not just the story, you know. It's like you said, it's a different way of telling the story of the Holocaust and the impact and the loss. And it's a love story and it's a family story and, you know, and it crosses continents. And it's just really, it's a really great, great book, and you know, it's really amazing.
I'm gonna buy one.
You're gonna buy one?
Oh, yeah. Wow, thank you. Also, I've just become part of the Jewish Book Council Author Network, which is very exciting, and they send their authors on tours and the like.
Oh, that's great.
So that's
we still have about a minute and a half left in this segment.
What I found
segment.
Interesting and good in a way is that I didn't think that there was such a thing as Holocaust studies in a school. You know, the fact that they're not forgetting and there are people being taught what a disaster that was on mankind, human people. And I really didn't think they had classes on that in school.
Yeah, what I've found is that it's part of the Judaic studies or the religion department.
Right.
And then that there'll be courses in Holocaust studies, and some schools have, you can specialize, you know, in that, you know, within that framework. Mm. So
a lot to cover. So we're going to be back after a short break. We've been speaking with Donna Deasy Stone, who is the author of No Past Tense.